If you wanted a handout from the lesson, there's a few more. Dan has some right there. If you want to raise your hand, we can get moving on with the lesson. And we're going to start looking at Exodus chapter 15. Exodus chapter 15. If you've not taught a Bible class, if you've not taught the children before, maybe this can be just a helpful way of looking and thinking about things. The lesson I was going to do last Sunday night was not going to be a fire and brimstone sermon. But the building got ready for it anyways, so I didn't get to do it. So Lord willing, we'll look at chapter 16 this coming Sunday night. And I wanted to include this little story at the end of 15. We looked at the crossing of the Red Sea and the song of that Abraham sings, the song that Moses sings, and then the song that Miriam sings. And we ended there in verse 21. And then the next story is this perfect little story. Verses 22 through 27 of chapter 15. It ought to be its own chapter, but even that's, it's too small to really be a chapter. And then chapter 16 is huge. Chapter 16 is the same story, but it's food instead of water. And then we get another water story in chapter 17. It's really curious to me how not only do we as regular normal human beings do the same dumb things over and over again. The Bible says, see, this is exactly what you do. Dumb things over and over again. We get three stories, and the lesson kind of changes throughout, but really it doesn't change that much. I think it's really curious. So Lord willing, next Sunday night we'll look at chapter 16. It's got more meat to it, and sits as its own lesson. And I just cut out this little story because it was going to make the sermon way too long. So I'm doing it as a Sunday morning lesson, even though I'm supposed to be doing a series on Jesus. So if you've got the handout, you notice that I slapped them in at the end, but not just slapdash. I think that it fits well, and otherwise you can just consider it two little sermons this morning. We're looking at that God provided the people with sweet water. He shows Moses a log or a tree, depending upon the translation, and that fixes the problem. So we're going to go ahead and just read through the story. It's not very long. In my photograph taken that very day, the waters are that triangular squiggly bush at the bottom. So I just love these old pictures. So this is, I think that might be the tree that Moses is going to use on the right hand there. And his staff looks like a baton. But reading the story here in Exodus chapter 15, then Moses made Israel set out for the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Then they came to Marah. They could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. There the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them, saying, if you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I'll put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. Yeah, it's just perfect. It's got everything we need. If you're going to teach a Bible class on these verses, it has all the different kinds of elements that you want in a story to consider and draw out lessons from it. What I like about this tiny little story is it illustrates that interesting conundrum that we all have. If I had just seen Jesus or just seen one of his miracles, then that would have made all the difference to me. And then we read little stories like this, and God says, nope. It doesn't make a difference, does it? What was chapter 15 about? Chapter 15 is not about the bitter waters of Marah. The bitter waters of Marah is chapter 15 and a half, right? Chapter 15 is the Lord's slayed the Egyptians, both horse and horseman, is under the sea. Man, if I had, but God, I'm telling you though, if you had shown me a miracle, then I'd trust you, right? Then they just walked through the sea on dry land. But if God had shown them a miracle, right? You know, we are funny beings. We need more than we think, and we react in different ways. This story, I think, shows the limits of seeing God's presence and His power, of how much that will do on us, or how that will change us. And it demonstrates, even by the instruction from God Himself, that that change isn't because God shows up and God does the thing, but because we are making the diligent effort with our own hearts. And I think that that's really what we need to get into our own hearts, is if Jesus had just done a miracle near me, then that would have made all the difference. That's not the right sentence. But it could be that if I had seen a miracle, then I might want to make all the difference in my own heart to follow after Jesus. But how many thousands of people have lived and loved God and didn't need the miracle to make that diligent effort in their heart? And that's really what this is about. That's what the whole Gospel of John is about, right, at the very end. But these have been written so that you may believe, and that by believing, and that effort that we're making in our heart. I just love this story. So in verse 22, we have the wilderness experience. We get a sense of what it's like. The wilderness experience is difficult. It is uncomfortable. It is full of weary days. It is not described in a pretty way. They went wandering in the wilderness. All right, immediately that sounds uncomfortable, okay? And I don't know how wild their wildernesses are, but it doesn't have to be that wild for most of us to feel uncomfortable. And it says that they had gone 3 days without water. How many hours does it take your family of five or six or three or two? How many hours can you go without a water break, right? And we're driving down the highway, and we can't find the gas station sign on the marker that we're looking for. We can't find the fast food restaurant of our choice so that we can get our coffee or our soda or whatever it is that you want on the highway. And this is 3 days. If this is the beginning of the wilderness journey, I don't think they know it's going to be 40 years, right? It's the beginning of this journey, and they've gone 3 days without water. I've never gone 1 day without water, and I cannot imagine trying to walk my family and the et ceteras of my family for half a day without water. Now, the grumbling mounts up and mounts up, and we see that this grumbling that is in them is a revelation of their selfishness. But I like taking the time, at least in this one, to sympathize with the characters of the story. I know that in this story, I would be no better than they. Maybe I would be better in the later stories, but I'm not totally sure about that one. But I can sympathize with this. This is a mess. They've just followed their leader, this guy, out in the middle of this area, and there's nothing to drink. And then they finally get some salvation, right? They finally come to Mara, and there is water there, and their salvation is a joke. Their salvation is laughing at them, right? Here it is. We are saved. This is the water. We can't drink any of this. This is worse than a mirage. And, you know, the cartoons where they see the stuff, and then they run up there, and it's not even there. That's bad enough. But if you run up there and it actually is water, but you can't drink the water because it's bad, that's got to be worse because you're tempted to try. And only in cartoons are they tempted to drink the sand, right? But if it's actual water and you know it's bad for you and you know it's going to make you sick or it's salty or whatever the problem is, it's bitter, you might still even try and you're going to end up even worse. And so this is not salvation. This is salvation turned on its head. This is destruction wearing the clothing of salvation. This is absolute insult on top of their injury. It's like the line from Coleridge, water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink, and how painful that would feel to them. We live in a cursed world, and the salvation that is in this world, even naturally, let alone the worldliness of sin. But even some of the saving things in this world fail us, right? How much water out there can you actually drink when you find it? It's all going to make you sick. Sometimes because we poison it, sometimes because it's just dirty water. And that's just the world that we live in. What we count on ends up failing us. Oh, well, there's all the notes about that. It's not very interesting because I think I said all that. But then Israel starts to speak out and they grumble. We see that in verse 24. I love this definition. Sometimes I say I look at the word grumble and it means to grumble. This one has a really funny alternate definition. It means to lodge, to stop over, and to stay the night, or to grumble, complain, and murmur. And I thought, that's wild. And I was looking at different usages in the Old Testament, and it's just like you're reading through the context, and it is either they stayed the night, or they lodged for a while, or they grumbled. It was absolutely clear what the context was. And I don't know if this is the reason the Hebrew word has this connection, but it might be when you have people stay in the night and you don't want them to stay the night with you. That or you're staying at somebody's house and their bed is a little bit lumpier than you're used to. I don't know if that's the connection, but that's my kind of fun, joking connection. They get there and they're grumbling and they complain to Moses, right? What do we drink? And that demand out of Moses is a mess. They're demanding, you need to provide, you need to give us our security, you are our protection, and they are living this absolutely unimaginative, selfish life, hiding from their own duties and their own accountability. Well, you're out here with me too, why don't you go look for water? And maybe that's too rude of a response. And yes, Moses is the one who is physically leading them, but they're putting all this on his shoulders. They're not really taking much of it on themselves. Now, there might be this backstory or the side story that they were sending out scouts and looking all over the place. But the way the story is presented to us, they're all following the guy Moses, and it's all Moses' fault. They're grumbling at him. And they're crying out, and they're just whining about it. You got us into this mess. We came here and this salvation failed us, so what are you going to do? You need to fix it. The reality is, whether we're talking out in the world and our different interactions out there, or even in the body of our congregation here, how do you speak to your sisters and brothers? We have elders here, and we also have people who are older that we want to listen to for advice, appointed or no. The women are going to listen to the older women. You have Bible teachers, and we have appointed elders. How do you speak to them? What are we going to drink? Is that the kind of question that they can even help us with? Are we living with demands and complaints without thinking about what we can do? Moses, in turn, cries to God. And that word doesn't mean tear cry. It means to cry out or to call out. I think that's pretty interesting. He's not, sometimes when we hear the word cry, we think whining. Whining would fit more with the Israelites' descriptor. He is reaching out and crying out to God for help. It might be loud. It might be intense. Where are you, God? We have plenty of psalms that are that way. But it does demonstrate a different tone that Moses is using. What I see here is he is speaking out in humility. He is essentially saying, God, you are the only one who can provide for us. You are the only one that can save us. But it doesn't sound like it has the demands. What are you going to do about it that the Israelites came to with him? And so we have to figure out how to navigate the complicated world of feeling the grumble building up inside me and then changing it so that that's not the way I'm living. Because we have to make requests. Not, what are we going to drink? And just blasting people and slamming them or slapping them across the face with it. But saying, we need water, what are we going to do? Or how can I help? Or what? I don't know. There's all sorts of different ways that we can just tweak the vocabulary and tweak our tone so that we're going to be doing a better job. We also have to be able to talk with people and make it not just grumbling about other people, right? Or that problem over there, or did you hear about that? Or I've got this issue and they're not helping me and I want this. And all of these things are stemming from selfishness. Moses does dip into it a number of times, but the Israelites just keep revealing that about themselves. They complained when they got when they were sandwiched between the sea and Pharaoh's army. Well, I would be upset too. They complained after 3 days of no water. Well, I would be upset too. These are real issues, but it's showing up in a way that they ought to have had better self-control. I don't have good self-control with these sorts of things. We're all living in a wilderness, aren't we? These are the tokens and the battles that we are going to be having, duking out our wilderness troubles by dealing with this sort of a thing. Maybe not 3 days without water, but sometimes we've gone 30 minutes without a snack and the hanger is building up inside us, right? And that's when it becomes real for us even now. That this is when it exhibits, we are living in a wilderness, God might have created a beautiful earth, but we are still in this wilderness, and we have to have self-control. And then God comes out and heals. And the big question is, what on earth does a log have to do with fixing the water? Right? Well, if it was a tree and then the leaves and they could have filled... No! Like, there's nothing. This is... You know, from the worldly sense, like when Paul is answering in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, you know, what do you mean you don't think that there's a resurrection? How could Christians think that there's no resurrection? Well, it's probably because they're human beings saying, I know what happens to dead bodies. They rot. You know, you know, maybe a body that's been dead for a couple of days, but what about a body that's been dead for a couple of years or lost at sea? That doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I can see the sense in that confusion. How's a log or a tree going to fix bitter water? It doesn't. And I think that thinking about that connection is really interesting. How does God make a tree make water sweet? What connection is there between logs, trees, and sweet water? Well, the cross is often called a tree. It's interesting how quickly in the story of the preaching of the cross that Jesus is all of a sudden hung on a tree. Have you noticed that? I think it starts in Acts 5. That's like within weeks of Acts 2. And so immediately they're talking about Jesus hung on a tree. So in the Jewish mindset, there's these connections. And I just think that that's kind of interesting, that there is this tree, this cross, this tree that we look to. We are buried with Christ in the waters of baptism. I don't know. Those are some of the things I thought of. I don't know if there is an answer. But this is one of those questions that I think is worth thinking about. How God healed the waters. He made the waters sweet. He saw the problem. And then using this tree, he could make it right for the people. And I think that that's really curious. All it says is, if you turn the right page, it says it. And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log. And he threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. Can you imagine the Israelites? All right. You can drink it now.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, who's going to be the first to risk that sip? There's a log floating in it, and it's fixed. I don't know what that looked like for them, but that would be wild, like any of the miracles. But then God uses this and says, in there he made this a statute and a rule and a testing. And I don't know if he's including the waters made sweet or if it's just this thing coming up. But based on these events of you didn't get what you needed, your salvation failed, and God is here to save, God is here to fix these problems for you. And so then now God says he makes them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them saying, if you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and to do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I'll put none of the diseases that I put on the Egyptians. How many voices of the Lord, right in his eyes, commandments and statutes had they been receiving so far? Right? They don't even have the Ten Commandments yet. In a few pages, they're going to vow to do everything God says, even before they know what God says. God is setting them up. Now, they've already got the instructions for the Passover, and you need to get yourself ready and have the unleavened bread, and you need to leave that night. So there's been some rules and instructions, but he is letting them know, before he gives them his word, the nature of his word. And I think that that's pretty interesting. He makes this place of I can heal your problems. The place that he starts teaching about the value of his word. Because God's word and God's voice is intimately connected to our behavior. It is actually intimately connected to our environment. They were there at a place where the water was broken and God said, I can fix it, do everything I say. And in the next chapter, it's very well, you know, like, food is going to show up and you can only get it my way. It's absolutely connected. And so we are today following instructions at the youngest 2,000 years old. And some of the instructions are older than 2,000 years. We are following words thousands of years old. And the common issue and struggle and tension is, what does 2,000 years ago have to do with me and my town and my culture and my environment? And God is saying it's absolutely and intimately connected to it. Because you have to think about what God says. The line there, do what is right in his eyes, isn't about law. How do I know what's right in God's eyes? Well, there's commandments and there's statutes. My silly example is, but God never gave me a rule about methamphetamines. So how am I going to make that decision? Well, I've got to figure out what is right in God's eyes. And that should have affected them when they came to a land with no water and then bitter water. What does God want me to do? Well, I probably shouldn't grumble, although I'm in a terrible mood. You know, those sorts of things. And then God says, I am the Lord your healer. You know, this story's big. There's just so many little things going on in this story. That's one of the other things that you can think of. He is the healer of bodies. He healed the body of water. He heals our body and heals our spirit. And there's a lot of different things that you can think about. Take that one home and kind of wonder about that. And then he tries to tell us that we can trust him. Where do they go to? Sounds like almost the next day. I doubt it was later in the day, right? They go to Elim. 12 springs of water, 70 palm trees, and a river. That's called paradise. It's not the paradise. It's not the promised land. But when you were in the desert and you come to a land with 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees and you can camp by a river, you just found paradise. You're in the wilderness. You're losing out. The salvation that you see in front of you turns out to be a joke. God says, I heal these things. Listen to what I say. Think about what God thinks about, and I'll bring you to paradise. And this is just the perfect little story. What we have around us are absolutely connected to God's word. And he's giving us these instructions that feel old-fashioned but are intimately connected to us. When Jesus was given a question about divorce, he said, well, let's go back to page 2 of the Bible, in my Bible. He starts talking about marriage. Page 2, that's old. Page 2 of the Bible is relevant in a society that is wondering about the nature of page 2 in the Bible, male and female. It's still relevant. It answers the questions that people are struggling with today. The way Paul talks about one of the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land, he says it's the first commandment with a promise. Listen to your parents so that you'll have a decent life. Your parents are going to say, don't play in the highway, and if you obey them, you'll survive to adulthood. You will live longer in the land if you listen to your parents. There's more spiritual meaning to that, but just in the very surface level, if we will listen to God, we can get by and we can survive. And he's trying to get us to see the connection that we have. My life is connected to the land around me, and God made both and gave words that ordered both. God gave words for me to follow, and he gave words for the trees and the grass to follow. And those laws we need to abide by. If we would just hold fast to our integrity just a little bit longer. I don't know how long a little is. A little has been feeling a lottle to me lately. The wilderness is a pain in the neck, and I've been getting really grouchy. I got to hold on. I don't know if I'm going to see the 12 springs and 70 palms any day soon, but it's there. It's there. In Matthew 14, we have another story. This is where I'm drawing in Jesus. And I like the way, this is another perfect story. You know, Peter walking on the water. It's just perfect. Lord save me and the Lord saves him. It's just a perfect story. We need to have it in our minds and our hearts. But it's another example of the wilderness problem. They're out at sea and it's a struggle and they don't know what's happening when they see some guy walking to them on the water. It's also another example of creating your own wilderness problem because Peter jumps out on the water. Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 22. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up onto the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." I don't know how much, "Come on, y'all knuckleheads, do not be afraid." I don't know how much that attitude is in his voice. Or, "Don't worry, it's me. Don't be afraid." I don't know what Jesus sounded like in this story. It seems like every time I read the story, Jesus has a different tone of voice, usually depending upon how big of a knucklehead I've been behaving lately, or how much hurt I have been in lately. But the thing is, they're in the waters, it's a stressful set of waters, and here's something coming at them. I'm about to pass them by, and they don't know what it is, and the fear of the unknown is messing with all of us the past few years. Maybe that's why the last few years seem like the worst ever, because what's happening and what's going to happen next? That's what we feel like, right? It's unpredictable. And they see this thing that they don't understand and they don't know what to do. And Jesus is there to help. Even if he's annoyed that they're scared. I don't think he is. "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." There are times when we get scared and we should have just known better. Take heart. Jesus is there. Do not be afraid. There are times when we are in the wilderness or in a storm and we ought to be scary because it's bad. Take heart. Jesus is there. Do not be afraid. He is there for us. We don't need the cloud and the fire at night. It didn't always help the Israelites. They forgot about God. We don't necessarily need a miracle walking on the water because they didn't know it was Jesus. Take care. Jesus is here for us. We do not need to be afraid. Jesus remains faithful to us, no matter what sort of things we're doing. Verse 28, and Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Peter's just absolutely fun. The question, "Lord, if it is you," if it's not the Lord, do you want to trust the guy who's going to invite you out on the water? You know, who is it if not Jesus? And if it's anyone other than Jesus, don't get out there. But he does, and he goes out. He puts himself into this sticky situation, and he's able to manage it because God is giving him strength, and God is giving him the power to do this impossible thing. And then he remembers, "Oh my goodness, what am I doing out here? I'm walking on water." And he sees the wind, and he sees the waves, and then he starts thinking with his brain. It's really fun to look up the different times in the Bible that someone says, "I thought." And we are supposed to think. I mean, clearly there's times when Jesus is upset because his apostles aren't thinking. But when someone says, there's often a behold. Behold, I thought, just read the knuckleheaded thing they thought. Peter here, he knew Christ's power, didn't he? He'd seen all the miracles so far. In fact, he'd seen miracles that day. He knew Jesus in his own past. He also knew Jesus in his present. Jesus was floating on the water, and so was he. And he still sank. Faith is a tricky thing. Faith is complicated. We need to be constant in our faith, but we understand that that's a complicated thing. And we can laugh at Peter all we want, but I'm pretty sure I'd have done the same thing if I had gotten out of the water. I'd have had troubles. We're supposed to use these stories to think about our own selves and realize I should have done better yesterday when I was talking of so-and-so. I grumbled, or I didn't trust, or I was upset. Any number of problems that we can get ourselves into. Lord, save me. Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? If you're going to come up with an answer to this question, keep it to yourself and think of a half a dozen more answers. That's the nature of this question. Peter's the kind of guy that answers. And all the other apostles are saying, come on, Peter, hush. Because he wants us to think about this question. Why did you doubt?
Well, because of the waves.
How many responses can we think of? Well, that was a dumb answer, Peter. We're supposed to think about why do we do this. The reality is we've doubted and we have doubts ahead of us that are going to plague us whether we give in to them or not. And we need to be ready. We need to be ready. Jesus saves, God heals, bitter water, stormy water. We live in an unpredictable world. Well, we need that single eye that it talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. If your eye be single, or if you set your eye on the one thing, only one thing is necessary. And so, if you looked at Jesus instead of the waves and the wind, right? If we looked at the cloud above us rather than dwelling on the fact, okay, you find out that the water's bitter. Okay, but we've got a cloud. Clouds rain. Maybe God can rain. You know, like, if you dwell on the good or the hope rather than this is terrible. I'm so frustrated. This is not what I wanted. Nobody wanted that. But we need to focus on the really good things. Because walking with integrity, walking with faithfulness every single day turns out to be really, really hard. Because it's a wilderness and it gets drier and drier. Sometimes the things that we counted on to get us through, not necessarily in a worldly sense, I'm going to make millions of dollars. No. But if you've been putting your money in the bank, you expect to find it there, meager amount as it is. And when that fails, which it can happen, you're not a sinner because you put money in the bank and then the bank failed. It's because we live in a wilderness and the waters are bitter sometimes. But God is trying to let us know by letting us walk in a wilderness that if we will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord our God and do that which is right in his eyes and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, he's going to keep other things from us. It's really easy to list all the troubles that we know we're suffering. How many troubles are we not suffering that we don't know about? Right? I'm going to close by looking at Psalm 119. We're going to start reading in verse 89. We'll close with that. Psalm 119, 89. We live in a wilderness, and sometimes as I'm working on lessons, I think about how beautiful and good this world is despite all the sin. And sometimes as I'm working on a lesson, and now that I'm doing Exodus and they're in the wilderness the whole time, I feel like I'm noticing how much of a wilderness this world is. And that, you know, God gives us both at the same time to suit our needs. In this Psalm 119, the psalmist is so wholly devoted on God's word. It's the only thing that's seeing him through. We're only going to read one little section, verses 89 through 96. Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. Your faithfulness is unto all generations. Thou hast established the earth, and it abides. They abide this day according to your ordinances, for all things are your servants. Unless your law had been my delight, I should have perished in my affliction. I will never forget your precepts, for with them have you quickened or enlivened me or revived me. I am yours. Save me, for I have sought your precepts. The wicked have waited for me to destroy me, but I will consider your testimonies. I have seen an end of all perfection, but your commandment is exceedingly broad. I love that last line. We can see an end of all the great things that we're doing or people have done. There are limits to all the stuff we see. Even this world that's lasted for as long as it has looks like it's going to break down someday. It's, you know, that's just kind of the way things are looking. But the word that God gives us, if we would just hold on to that, that's the one thing that seems like it's renewed every day as opposed to the land that feels more worn and our bodies that feel more worn every day. And I don't know where you are in your wilderness. Maybe you just found out that you showed up at Mara and you thought you were at Elim and you're all depressed. My heart breaks for you. Maybe you can see Elim in the distance and you're getting close, and that's wonderful. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with your age, whether you're at Mara or at Elim. I think we go to those places over and over throughout our lives. But the point with all that is, none of that's going to make any difference if you don't know God. Because you're going to find bitter waters with and without God, and you're going to find some springs of water with and without God. But God is going to bring you to the 12 springs and to the 70 palms and to that good river in that conceptual beatitude, perfect way. It's going to last any longer than the temporary springs that we find ourselves at here on earth. We need God, and we need His Word. And if you need to be with God, if you haven't been baptized, you need to get in the water so you can have those things washed away. So you can be walking. Still be in a wilderness, but you'll be walking in the direction of the paradise that God offers to you. And if you have been baptized, if you've made your life right with God, and like me and like the rest of us, you've realized your mistakes or you've been needing some help from your sisters and brothers, this is a time for all of us to pray and to reach out to each other. If there's anyone here who needs help or prayers from the saints, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing?